I read today that Santa Claus is writing his own programming language. That's correct. He's going to write a new programming language to keep track of his workforce. I think it's going to be an object-oriented programming language. Each class can have itself as a member. That's right. It'll be elf referential. Hey, guys. Heidi, heidi, ho, Daniel Markham here. This is Nerd Roundup. If you've never been to a Nerd Roundup before, well, you haven't missed pretty much a damn thing in your life, and it's glad that you came to. We're glad you came today because Nerd Roundup is the time we get together and talk about the tech news of the week with an eye, sort of a slant of being humorous and having fun. Teams that can relax and joke around with one another can do tremendously cool things. And the only way I know to show you how to do that is just to demonstrate it. I don't think you can actually teach somebody to get along with other people. And Lord knows I need enough practice, as much as I can get. Today, we do not have anybody, and it is my own fault. The fault, dear Brutus, is mine, because my internet is down, and that made me very sad. I think we had at least two people that were coming by. John Kern was one of those. But as you can see here in the screen, it says, no hable internet, which is sort of tech speak for it ain't working. But I'll start up anyway. If it comes back, I'm going to give it a shot and see if we can get people on. I told folks not to bother because Lord knows if it does come back, they're probably going to get really fretted trying to bring it up and coming down. And it's just, it's no good. What have I been doing this week? Well, dang. I have been working on this thing over here. Been using the Digraph, GraphWiz dot language to draw some diagrams. This is in preparation for a series of articles I'm writing on test-driven development at the enterprise level, sort of making the CI/CD pipeline sort of be immediately have immediate feedback instead of being this huge pipeline we construct using something I call big toe testing, make that happen right away. I've been corresponding with several people, one of which asked me my opinion on something technical. I told him, and then he wanted to start arguing with me. I don't know. I don't know why I should argue about my own opinion. Do you like chocolate ice cream? Yes. Damn it. Vanilla's best. It's like, okay, I believe you. Vanilla's best. You win. So what are the links this week we're going to talk about? Well, first off, it wouldn't be a Nerd Roundup if we're not going to talk about the advent of code. This is a big deal. Just came out a couple days ago. If you haven't done Advent of Code before, it is a website, adventofcode.com. Every day has a new technical challenge. You can sign on. There's no prizes or anything. You get a new nerdy problem every day and you go out and you try to solve it. Much, much fun. I think my experience has been the same as many other people. And that is, I really love it for, I don't know, a few days, a week or two. And then suddenly, you know, it's like 3 a.m. and I'm working on something. I realize, holy cow, I actually have a life that doesn't involve solving these sort of technical problems. It's one thing to like the crossword puzzles in the newspaper. It's another thing to spend your entire life filling them out. But this is real fun. If you're looking to do something cool, this is a cool thing, nerd thing to do. I read last week, one guy is writing his own programming language just through Advent of Code. It's been, people do this in Assembler. Or they do it in Bash. It's a hoot and fun. There's also a Reddit forum /r/ Advent of Code. So be sure to check that out because that's a fun thing. Okay, next link. This is, my friends, I have found my people. It is the Digital Museum of Plugs and Sockets. That's right. It is the digital home of all things wiry. Plugs, sockets, wires. As you can see here, there's just an amazing cornucopia of various things you can find. USB, there's just things I have never even seen before. And I did not know there were so many types of plugs in the world. I actually bought one of these plugs recently. So if it's, what is this? I think it's, we need to Google it, the Digital Museum of Plugs and Sockets. There's also a link on the blog entry associated with the podcast here. So I'm not going to dive down on that because actually I can't dive down anything because I have no internet and I am sad. So we're going to probably run pretty quick. I'm thinking 10, 15 minutes today because, I mean, I only have like 3 brain cells and 7 jokes. And you've heard all the jokes, and most of the brain cells are now kind of maxed out. Next link. This is a really, really cool article this guy wrote. It's about a 10 to 20 minute read, and it is an engineer's hype-free observations on Web3 and its possibilities. We mentioned this last week. It is in the link list for this week. Very, very cool stuff. If you don't know what Web3 is, what did somebody say? Web1 was people talking to you over the internet. Web2 was you talking back and forth with people over the internet, like client server type stuff. Web3 is talking amongst yourself. So the goal of Web3 is to totally, have we heard this before? Yes. The goal of Web3 is to decentralize the net. And they plan on doing it, as far as I understand, by using a blockchain technology, because, hey, everything is blockchain now. But the idea being that you create a blockchain that you take with you as part of your identity that contains payment information, preferences, whatever you want for you. And there could be many use. And then as you visit different sites, you take your little stuff with you and you can use it to pay and comment and whatnot. Pretty cool idea. There's a lot of potential there. You know, for instance, participants on a web forum, maybe you ask them to pay $100 to get a blockchain, of which they don't have to spend any money at all, but it's part of their identity. And then maybe that would prevent people from shitposting so much. Really, really cool ideas, really cool concept. One of the big problems this guy points out is the fact that there are so many different blockchain technologies, interoperability becomes an issue. And so the one service he says actually does this, you end up having to call out from one blockchain into the service, and the service calls into another blockchain. If you're kind of wondering how can you call out for an encrypted ledger, well, blockchain sort of gone past sort of digital coins. Digital coins were pretty much a hotel ledger that you encrypted and kept adding to. This is a smart contract, which means instead of signing your name in a ledger, you actually enter executable code in a ledger. As you can imagine, having encrypted code that other people can't see and giving that to other people along with a key, I mean, there's just all kinds of problems with that. One of which, like you said, is interoperability between blockchains. One of which is that, you know, do you really trust this person to give you something you can execute? But I think I agree with this author that there's a lot of promise here. There's a lot of capability. You shouldn't sell them short, but they're just getting started on the hype curve. And so you'll probably see a lot of Web3 stuff over the next year or two. And it is the wave of the future. Having said that, I've always said that Bitcoin and digital coins are the wave of the future as well. We're probably 10 years out from them being de facto currencies. Yeah, this may be 15 years out. It's just, we've got to work through a lot of bugs, my friends. But the great review here, if you have 10 or 15 minutes, you're interested in the technical side of Web3, check out this link. This next link is a RAS PBX install. And this spoke deeply to my inner nerd. If you guys don't know what a PBX is, Asterix is probably the most famous one of these. Basically, you're setting up your own telco. So a PBX means that you can give yourself phone numbers. It's like you're setting up your own, in this case would be like Daniel Markham's telephone company. And this guy has this cool code that you can actually put the PBX on your Raspberry Pi and take it with you. You might ask, why would I want to do that? Well, it's once you have your own telephone service, you can do SMS messaging. You can do all sorts of wild stuff you couldn't do before. For instance, you can create a bunch of different telephone numbers on your phone service. These phone numbers can be local to wherever you are, say Russia, China, or wherever, and they can actually ring you when you're in Brazil. And so you end up with local, free, internet-based calling that uses the telephone service, doesn't work like peer-to-peer stuff. So you don't really need a VPN. You are the man. Here, some ideas here. You have a small company. You'd like to have your own PBX with the ability to call outside. You got 10, 15 people. I think you can probably go up to hundreds of people, and everybody wants a new phone number. Because of COVID-19, you would like that your employees can work at home but have company phones. That's pretty wild. You would like to have the ability that your customers can call and use your own automated voice system for customer support. So instead of getting a VoIP thing that you bolt on top of something else, you can run your own. You'd like to have free telephone, audio and video calls through the internet, but on your own infrastructure. You live in one country, but you have business and mobile phone from another country. And you don't want to roam between these countries, so you'd like to be able to use the internet to relay your calls between these countries via the internet for free. So it's just really some really, really cool stuff. I have been interested in the Asterisk thing off and on for some time because I just thought it was really wild that you could do, kind of create your own telco. That's kind of blows my mind. Along those lines, I think Amazon had a press release this past week that said they're going to offer 5G for free. And it was kind of confusing. A lot of people thought, well, how, you know, you can like do your own, I guess Amazon's going to set you up with a 5G for your phone. What they're basically saying is that you can buy a box from them and run your own 5G node at your house or your place of work, and they'll provide the backend infrastructure for that. So it sounds really cool. Basically, they're just saying they'll set you up with a Wi-Fi hookup for your phone, which you probably already have anyway. This is a different thing. This is actually much more advanced. This Asterisk stuff, the PBX stuff, is some seriously nerdy stuff. The farther down you dive on this, the more stuff there is. One of the reasons I haven't gone as far as I'd like to is it get nerdy really quickly. But I think if this guy's got the image to set up on a Raspberry Pi, hey, maybe it's easy. Looks like a bunch of help files here on the GitHub page. Okay, next article. What Virgil Abloh's Drudge Report-inspired personal site says about the state of design. I have no idea who Virgil Abloh is. I do know what the Drudge Report is. This is a long, well, somewhat long, reminiscent and sort of meditation on, do we want really fancy web pages or not? And I get the argument that we want really fancy web pages because they drive engagement. I get the argument that we don't want really fancy web pages because we want to kind of be honest with what people are doing. It's a tough one. It is a tough one. I'm kind of left with the question, if we're making web pages more and more sort of interactive and complex, are we doing that for the people using the web pages, or are we doing that for the companies that are paying us to create the web pages? And so if I need, I don't know, a site that tells me the weather for tomorrow, don't I just bring up the site, have it tell me the weather? Hey, Greg Young, he's probably saying, hey, where is everybody? We're gone. What do I really need? My interaction with the outside world probably does not really need a lot of flaming text and spinning graphics and all that. I understand that when you put those on sites, people use them more. I understand that Dolly knows that there are better looking and worse looking sites. So, you know, one of the points he makes is that, you know, sometimes the crappy looking sites actually make you more engaged because you have to overcome the crappiness. So if you have this tabular plain text site, you're more likely to use it because it's crappy. And it seems to me like we're kind of engaging in circular reasoning here. If the site provides value to you, use it. Hacker News is a great example of a site that Reddit as well, but these are sites that they don't have no very fancy look to them. Compare that to LinkedIn or Facebook. Twitter, in its early days, was a nice, clean site. Didn't get in a lot of trouble with the other sites. Stayed out, you know, kept its nose clean, but then it kind of went off the rails at some point. So, SAS guys here, the startups, the bootstrap folks, they have this same question. And their question is, do you charge money for what your site does or not? And what we're kind of asking here is a very similar version of that question, which is, how much pain do you want your user to have? Oh, man, James Grinney and Greg both. Hang on here, guys. How much pain do you want to give these people? So I'm kind of on the keep it simple. Yeah, okay, John Kern. Oh, that's very sad. Hang on, guys. He got it. John Kern has... James Grinning, howdy partner. Hey, this makes me very sad. Let me do this thing. Hey, James! Exclamation point. Sorry, comma. No internet for us today. Period. Bummer. Period. So yeah, I got like four people coming by and the internet's out. Dang it. So I am with the make it a little harder on folks just to make sure that you're actually doing what you should be doing for them. Having said that, I love a beautiful site and I love good graphics design. I just wonder how much of this graphic design we're doing today is not, I don't know, popularity contest stuff instead of actually being something that people get real value out of. The next link, why adversarial image attacks are no joke. And this is wild. So the example we have here is a picture of President Obama. And then we have another picture of just this blurry man. And he holds up a picture of a flower in front of the blurry man. And suddenly the computer declares that this man is President Obama. That the man doesn't look like President Obama. The flower doesn't look like. Nothing about this looks like President Obama. But when he holds the flower up in front of the blurry image, bada boom, bada bing, it's President Obama. Now, see, this is crazy because facial recognition has gone apeshit, gone just way over the top. We've done really, really cool stuff in the last 10 years, and we don't know why. So we know it works. We're able to train it. We're able to use generative adversarial networks to make it better and better. But it's not as if the program's saying, you know, I look at the eyeball spacing in the nose and I determine who they are. No, it works, but we don't know why it works. And because we don't know why it works, people can do this thing like holding the flower up. Other examples, there's a keyboard. A man puts a keyboard is reclashed as a conch shell. So they just take the keyboard, they stick a picture of a fish in front of it, and suddenly the computer says it's a conch shell. Now, the problem here is that it's technically possible to say, I don't know, stick a sticker on a road sign and cause Teslas to crash. And I think the most interesting part of this was the nerd discussion online, because so many people were like, well, you know, this isn't really a big deal because we'll just make it against the law to put stickers on signs and do things that are mean. I think this is this reminds me of the early days of the internet when everything was possible. You know, with just more tech. Tech got us here. Tech will get us out. No problem. We'll get more tech. That doesn't work, get a hammer. The problem is not that we could not make laws to prevent people from putting stickers on road signs. We can certainly do that. People can put bunches of stickers on signs very quickly, and you could not tell which stickers are actually some sort of attack vector or not because you don't know how image classification works. In addition, one person could put on, you know, 300-400 stickers on road signs in one day. Who's going to stop them? If you catch that one person, well, another person does it the next night. There's some scalability issues here. And the troubling thing is that you don't know why it breaks the stuff. So you end up with this sort of attack vector where attacking people can come in, use your same network, your neural network, to figure out various attacks that you don't know. And then they can use those attacks against you, and you don't really know why the attacks work. You can prevent them from happening in the future, but you couldn't prevent new attacks. So this is very, very different than the CV stuff, you know, the zero-day stuff where somebody finds a leak in, you know, a buffer in a browser somewhere, and they take down, you know, your browser and your OS because of a malformed JPEG. Those are von Neumann, you know, machines. I know why it's broken. I know how they're exploiting the attack. You know, I can prevent that. This is, I don't know why it works, and I don't know how they broke it. I just know they broke it, and I can train the machine not to be broken that same way again. That is a much more iffy, squishy way of looking at security, and it is a dangerous thing. I agree with this author, and I find that when I see my fellow nerds online saying, nothing to see here, folks, please move along, it sets off my bullshit detector. And 99% of the time, there's really nothing to see here, and they're right. But every now and then, it's like the people telling me there's nothing to see here have a vested interest, and there not being anything to see here. So I always sort of perk up when I see, don't look here, nothing going on, folks. Next article, Pentagon stands up new unidentified aerial phenomena group as Congress pushes for even more action. And this is from The Drive. So we've gone from Where have you gone? Jeez. Swamp gas. There's no such thing as anything unknown in the sky. Everything we can see could be is known in some fashion in the 50s to, you know, either it's aliens or crazy people. That was sort of the 80s and 90s, maybe aughts. And now I think we've kind of maybe reached this sort of common sense place of, you know, every now and then something happens. We don't know what it is. It's probably important to study it, even if we don't know what it is. We don't have to dismiss it. We don't have to speculate about all kinds of crazy stories. We can just say, well, what that is. So this has gone from being ignored to like really, really taking off. It looks like the Pentagon setting up a classified, yet another classified group. FAA is going to be involved. Congress is pushing for even more action. The Pentagon group is going to focus on the security areas, special use areas, which are normally like areas around the coast of the U.S. Been quite a few sightings there. And that kind of makes sense because, you know, if you're responsible for the security of the nation, you probably would want to know what's going on in the airspace around the nation you're responsible for. But a bunch of other stuff happening. Nice review of everything. Yeah, who knows? I think the most worrying thing is that it's some sort of drone technology that an adversary has. Because if that's true, then we're really at a loss. We don't even know what it is or how it works. If it's some sort of natural phenomenon that we're just unaware of, that's really, really cool. We can sort of study that and figure out some stuff we didn't know before. And if it's some oddball, you know, thing we don't, maybe green men from Mars, lizard people from inside the Earth, whatever, then that would be kind of interesting as well. But a clear and present danger would be an adversary with drones that we can't figure out what they're doing, especially if they're screwing around. You know, I think what people were saying is that there could be some drone technology that's actually spoofing all of our image systems at one time. And I guess they're saying they would spoof our visual or eyeballs at the same time. That's actually worse to me than aliens, because it means that we're really, really far behind. Okay, so I think this is my favorite story this week. This is a story I saw, came on about, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. And it was just blew my mind when I first read it. And there was a company that was going to build a startup around this. And it just completely fell apart. And everybody said, well, okay, this is just a bunch of BS. You know, this tech doesn't really work, blah, blah, blah. And this is called light field photography. And after the startup failed and everybody said it was, at first it was great, then it sucked. Now we actually have a lens that uses light field photography. You may be asking, Daniel, what is light field photography? Well, let me tell you. A light field photography is instead of recording the photons as they hit the sensor one at a time, you record a hologram. Basically, you record different aspects of the photons. Their spin, you look at things a different way, and you end up very much like building a sort of a holographic camera like you saw in Star Trek out of a regular camera. And then you use computational technology to create a three-dimensional image of whatever you're taking a picture of. It is freaking wild. The initial stuff I saw was you could take a picture and then adjust the focus after you took the picture, which is completely unheard of. If you look at this site here, the title is K-Lens unveils world's first light field lens that works on any camera. Got a picture of this, a picture on a camera, some more images. And down at the bottom, there's a YouTube video how it works. And it works almost like a kaleidoscope. I think it takes 9 different images at one time. So part of the problem they're kind of going through is not that the tech is bullshit, but the fact that, yeah, how many different sort of, how many different snapshots do you want of an image? So this is very much a holographic thing. So if you had like 1,000 different combinations of photons, you'd have a lot of detail about whatever 3D thing you were looking at. Of course, the problem is that that's probably not processable by any sort of thing we have today besides maybe a supercomputer. And so the Lido guys with the startup that failed, I think they were going to do maybe 30 or 40. And I believe they fell apart because of processing. These guys only do 9, and they're managing to get this wild effect even with just 9. So check out the video, if nothing else. It is really, really neat. As a friend of mine used to say, farm trout. I don't know what that means, but He seemed to think it meant something really cool. I also have, for reference, the light field camera link from Wikipedia, just to tell you guys that I have not been smoking any sort of cocaine or anything this week. And it's got a picture of the Lido prototype from the Lido guys. Neat stuff. So we're getting close to the point where we're going to have practical holographic cameras. And that is amazing. If we could have a practical holographic camera and a true 3D imaging system, this would change a lot of stuff. You know, one of the things I've always thought about is how would a true 3D imaging system actually work? So let's say you're able to create the Princess Leia thing from Star Wars. So you got this little person standing up that can speak to you. Well, first off, where do they go? Do you have like a special spot in your room just for the 3D people? Okay, it seems like that makes the most sense. And second of all, do you really want to look behind? I mean, does anybody want to see the back of Princess Leia's head? Probably not. So there has to be some sort of stage front, stage back, I guess. And then seeing the sides would be fine, but the front and back would have to be there. And then what scale would you want? If you had like a large screen 3D TV, would you really want a 2-foot head floating in your living room? I probably would scare the fuck out of me. But maybe you do. So there's going to be a lot of issues with exactly how you want this 3D stuff to work. But I do know that I'm big in 3D. I think this is going to be cool. These cameras are awesome. Next story. New opioids, more powerful than fentanyl, are discovered in District of Columbia amid deadly wave of overdoses. And the reason I thought this was a nerdy story is because two reasons. First off, these designer drugs are the thing now. So instead of, I guess, marijuana, you get this THC derivative that works like marijuana but isn't exactly. Fentanyl is a very, very powerful drug that can kill you in a drop. And now they've got derivatives of that aren't exactly fentanyl. Derivatives are much more powerful. That, to me, was the first kind of nerdy thing. And then there's a second one is one person now could conceivably smuggle enough, I guess, opioid drugs for a city for like a month or something. And it sort of destroys any idea we have of stopping smuggling unless we're going to like do full cavity searches on everybody that enters a city. And it doesn't seem like to be a world I want to live in. So we're empowering individuals to do really, really powerfully crazy things, which I don't think we're going to be able to stop. That's just the future. And we're also creating so many different variations of so many drugs that we'll either spend our life chasing these things around. Let's just face it. We had a war on drugs. The drugs won. That's just the long and short of it. And we should just accept the fact they won, surrender, move on. Education is our only way through this. Prohibition is not going to work. Next article. This is a site called OpenSea. I think it's .io. If you haven't heard of OpenSea.io, the subtitle is Discover, Collect, and Sell Extraordinary NFTs. That's non-fungible tokens. So if you don't know what an NFT is, they're basically cryptographically secure digital assets. Think of a picture of My Little Pony that only you own. Nobody else can have. Nobody else can share. It's just your little picture. And they're saying some of these are worth millions of dollars. Like, I'm with cryptocurrency. I'm there on the stuff we talked about, the Web3 stuff, but digital assets, I can't see where this could be anything but a bubble. But if you can understand why it's important, then it seems like there's a lot of money to be made here. Millions of dollars on some of these little pictures. And if you're interested in browsing these, OpenSea.io, OpenSea.io. I just don't know what to say about that. It just blows my mind. Okay, so this next one here, let me check to make sure the net is still down. Yeah, it sure is. Oh, dang. Okay, so this next one is an idea this guy had with a new web HTML tag, MD-block. You could also consider this a web component because, of course, the way the web works now is you create your own tag along with the JavaScript file, and bada boom, bada bing, you have your own new HTML tag. He proposes a tag called MD-block. What does MD-block do? Well, if you know what Markdown is, Markdown was come up with by somebody who said, you know, HTML is just too dang complicated. So instead, let's just make sort of a text-based file that will render to HTML. We'll just render it on the server and deliver it to people. And so you have this simple format of, you know, the pound is a headline, 2 pounds is a sub-headline, sub-2. You have, you know, a hyphen begins a list. There's all these little rules around Markdown. But the general idea is that you just type in plain text. The server converts it to HTML, delivers it to people. You don't have to learn HTML. To be honest, I kind of thought this was the biggest, one of the most dumbass things I've ever heard in my life. But, you know, I started using it. I'm like, you know, okay, I get it's easier. It's easier to type in Markdown when I don't want to convert to HTML and just have that as an option in my back pocket later on. Okay, well, by the way, I can generate HTML out of this. That made sense to me. Well, this guy's saying, well, what if you want to put Markdown in your HTML? So this is like Markdown making HTML that then makes Markdown, that then makes HTML. So this is, we have the elephant staying on top of the elephants. There's a demo here. Here we go. And so the demo just, he's got an MD block. Inside the MD block, inside the HTML MD block, he puts in Markdown, and then it renders the Markdown as HTML inside the larger HTML. I don't know what to say here. First off, we're already doing this. Like I said, the whole purpose was you type the Markdown at first, and then the server renders it or whatever if you want to, and you add HTML. Second of all, it seems to be much more of a battle between, do we do this on the server or do things on the client? And we already have great client libraries. As a matter of fact, I used one several years ago when I was doing my modular blogging system. So I guess the point he's trying to make is he wants sort of a block system just for the Markdown. I don't know. It made sense to him, and you're welcome to look at the site. Bunch of stuff's got a fallback for it. It was fun. He got a lot of votes on Hacker News, so he must have been doing something right. And that is still down. And then this morning I was looking at this Sanctuary software making websites small. I usually go through about two dozen articles a week that I don't include. This is one of them. And this is just sort of a motherhood and apple pie baseball. How to take your web page and make him small. And I don't have anything against this. I mean, we could certainly argue, you know, what would be the best way of doing that? Why would you want to do this? This sort of gets back to the UI discussion around simple websites. Yeah, I'm a big fan of keeping things simple, especially with web downloads, because I found that I need about 1/100th of the complexity and size for a web page that I used to think I needed. And it may be coming up on 1,000th right now. And to me, that's just an incredible ratio. This isn't is it potato? Is it potato? This is, you know, is it the letter A or is it the dictionary? It's a difference in type, not just a difference in size. So these guys are playing a lot of code golf with web page sizes. I found that I can do some quick stuff in just a little bit of space. Your mileage may vary. Okie dokie. Well, we're 35 minutes in. This is Nerd Ramp so far. Do I have any? What am I? What media have I been consuming this week? Well, I watched True Story on Netflix. Kevin Hart, Wesley Snipes. Story about a comedian who gets into all sorts of problems. And much hilarity ensues. Actually, it's not funny at all. It's a very serious drama. I want to say I liked it. I did like the overall idea. I feel like it was yet another, I can tell this story in 2 hours, but I'm going to drag it out into 6 kind of deal. I keep seeing more and more of, but it was a good story. Pretty good quality. I started on a negotiation course from the Great Courses series this week. Very, very good. I'll let you know about that when I finish it. about it for consumption. Of course, we started watching all the Christmas movies and listening to Christmas songs, Christmas, 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 and more Christmas. I do want to point out that from the small amount of observation I've made about the holiday season is that Christmas and Santa and the people that hang out with Santa, they got a hell of a problem. I mean, you know, it's a year without Christmas, Santa get lost, Santa quit, Santa got sick, they replaced, Santa falls off a roof. There's just seems like every time you turn around, there's something either threatening Santa or Christmas. So you really should, you don't, if you see Santa, run away from that guy because he's bad news. So you've gone and done it again. You've wasted a good 35 minutes of your time. You could have been spending listening to Christmas music or trying to help Santa out of his latest jam. But instead, you were here with us, Nerd Roundup, and I'm really happy you came by. I hope that these so-and-so, you know, I think it's back up now. I hope these so-and-so people, yeah, it is back up. See what I'm going to do. I'm going to join again. These so-and-sos that made this problem for us actually fix it. Let me see. We may end up with a roundup after the Nerd Roundup. Hey, guys. James, you're on. You're on live, James. Well, not live, but you're on recorded.
Okay.
I was just saying goodbye. I finished the whole thing up in 35 minutes. I'm like, well, let me try one more time. You got a second to talk or just?
Oh, yeah, in a second.
Yeah, well, just
1 second, though.
Thanks for hanging out.
Hi. You can help me with.
What can I help you with? Oh, hang on, I'm going to put James on. Like the roundup after the roundup. And he went away.
Go on, James.
He'll come back, then it'll drop again. All right. Okay, well, and there's James. James, you're looking kind of green. Okay, well, this is awkward. I feel like one of these telemarketer dudes.
Dan, it might take me 5 minutes here. You want to wait, or should I call you back later?
That's fine. I just thanks for coming by. You're the only the net dropped. It just came back. So take care, my friend. Call me back. Okay. I'll stay on the line if you want to come back in a little bit.
All right. Well, if you get impatient, go away then. See you later.
All right. And that was the only nerd we had for the roundup because the net's only been on for 1 minute. I'm Daniel Markham, and I will see you on the internet.